We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Everybody, we got a great one today, you know, for a change. Our old friend Mark Leibovich joins me to discuss what's going on in our nation's capital. For those of you who don't know Mark, he's a staff writer at The Atlantic, formerly with The New York Times. He's also an MSNBC analyst. Trump gave his address to the joint session of Congress on Tuesday, of course, the longest one in history. For all intents and purposes, it was a State of the Union address. Trump certainly treated it that way. I know he set a record for people he introduced in the balcony. I may be wrong, but the first president I remember doing that was Ronald Reagan. And he had one guy who had he had jumped into the Potomac to save a woman's, this is January, frigid waters, early 80s. This guy dived into those icy waters and into the Potomac to save someone. And since then, other presidents have introduced people in the gallery, but nowhere near as many as Trump introduced this past week. But he had plenty of time to call Joe Biden the worst president in our history. I've never seen that. And then Trump blamed Biden and not the bird flu for the price of eggs. One of the people Trump introduced was Elon Musk, the head of Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency. He's also the richest person in the world, who cut off life-saving aid from USAID to the poorest people in the world. And through Doge, he has been firing untold numbers of federal employees throughout the country, about 85%. Of federal employees live outside the D.C. area, of Virginia, Maryland, and that area. So these are government workers all over the country who are getting the axe. Now, we had a close call on tariffs. President Trump threatened to raise tariffs on Mexico and Canada, then cancel them for a month after both countries threatened to retaliate. Of course, Trump always gets tariffs backwards. When we place tariffs on goods from other countries, our importers are the ones who pay the tariffs, and they pass that cost on to American consumers, which drives up inflation. So our tariffs on other countries' products increase inflation here. But other countries sometimes retaliate because it drives up the cost of their products here. And basically, these tariffs are just, they're not good for either country. But Trump seems to love them. Meanwhile, we have a president who has switched sides in the war between an enemy, Russia, that invaded our ally, Ukraine. This disgraceful turn of events is hard to fathom, unless you consider that perhaps Donald Trump owes some kind of debt to Vladimir Putin. And I really can't begin to think what that could be. And how Vice President Vance climbed aboard to gang up on President Zelensky in the Oval Office. To me, that was bizarre. Maybe Vance knows something that we don't. All I know is that Russia invaded Ukraine in 2014 and then again in 2022, and that the United States had Ukraine's back from 22 until this January. And for some reason, we've switched sides. Trump also has cut off any weapons and ammo to Ukraine, and the administration announced that Trump is weighing whether to revoke the legal status of 240,000 Ukrainians who fled to our country after Russia invaded theirs. Jeez. Anyway, Mark Leibovich joins me for a great one today. You know, for a change. So last time we tried to talk to you, you were in Greenland and going from Greenland to Iceland, I believe.
Yeah, that was an adventure. Yeah, I wrote about Donald Trump's inauguration in Greenland.
How many people do live in Greenland?
50,000 in the whole country, which is less than the population of Bethesda, Maryland. 15,000 in the capital city of Nuuk.
And that's where you spent most of your time?
I spent 10 days there. I was supposed to spend 5 days, but the thing about Greenland is it's a very small airport. And if it snows, which happens many, if not most days, they cancel the flights. And there's only one flight out of the country every week, and that's to Iceland, which is in the other direction. Eventually, I got a flight to Iceland, and then I was there a couple of days. But these are all, you know, very nice countries.
Trump mentioned it in the speech again.
Oh, yeah, he's all over it. I mean, it was interesting. I mean, going back to the inauguration, I mean, there was like a whole watch party for Donald Trump's inauguration speech in Greenland at the parliament, and all these political junkie types and members of parliament were gathered around some office. And they were kind of curious. It's like, hey, he's going to mention us. That'll be kind of interesting. Maybe we'll get a line. Maybe we'll get a couple lines. And then within minutes of the speech starting, when you sort of got a sense of the aggressive tone and the somewhat predatory tone that he was taking on foreign policy, everyone got really nervous and they started shaking their legs. And it was like, oh, I hope he doesn't mention us. Please don't mention us. Please don't mention us. And so he did Panama, which is usually first. I think he did Canada, which is usually second. Then Greenland usually comes after Canada. So they're all holding their breath. But then he went right from Canada to Mars. So this member of parliament who was sitting next to me said, well, I guess he's now calling Greenland Mars. But anyway, they were relieved. But yeah, no, he seems, you know, we'll get it. What did he say the other day? Like, we'll get Greenland, or we will own Greenland no matter what it takes, which, of course, is very menacing.
Now, of course, Denmark, it's part of Denmark. It's a territory of Denmark's.
It is, yes.
Right. And they have no interest in selling themselves. Now, what is to prevent us from getting a military base there?
We already have a military base there. Yeah. I mean, there are bases there. I mean, we technically protect or help protect Greenland as a NATO country or part of a NATO territory. So, yeah, there's all kinds of territory sharing and military base. So, yeah, I mean, that used to be the major airport until recently.
And he talked about their precious metals, I guess, in the speech, the State of the Union speech. And there's nothing going to stop us from trying to mine those with their permission, right?
Yeah, I mean, you need to strike a deal. I mean,
a deal like we are with Ukraine, or trying to do.
We're trying to, or Panama, which we're trying to, which, you know, the Panamanians don't seem to be terribly psyched about. But, you know, the fact is, and, you know, a lot of the Greenlanders were saying this. I mean, if Donald Trump, I mean, he doesn't seem to be in a place where much is stopping him. If he decides to send a bunch of troops into Greenland, it's not like they're going to stop us. You know, then it becomes a war against NATO, which gets really fun really fast.
Well, I think if a country attacks NATO, the other NATO members are at war with whoever that is, so that we'd be at war with NATO.
Yeah, we a NATO member, theoretically, would be at war with NATO.
Yeah. Well, what did you think of the speech? I mean, you watched it, I assume.
Yeah, I did. It was long.
It's the longest ever. Longest speech ever.
Yeah. Set a record. It was like 1 hour, 30 minutes, even more maybe. You know, I actually, if you get through the noise of it, and there was a lot of noise of it, there was a lot of spectacle in the crowd. I mean, Democrats tried to hold up signs, and Al Green of Texas, member of Congress, Democrat, got ejected for, you know, heckling and so forth. A lot of back and forth, a lot of standing ovations. There wasn't much news, I didn't think. I sort of read the transcript a couple times, didn't see a lot of news there. A lot of bombast. I mean, if you sort of want to look at a tonal shift to going from like 11 to 13, you know, maybe you could go there. He reminded everyone that he still has designs on places like Greenland and what have you. I mean, this was kind of a classic separate the signal from the noise. And there was a whole lot of noise. But look, I don't think many people will remember it in a week.
Since then, he's said he's going to revoke the legal status for 240,000 Ukrainians.
Yeah, it does seem like the hits keep on coming for Ukraine. I mean, starting less than a week ago, or maybe a week ago, you know, well, it started a long time ago, sort of the day he was reelected. But, you know, the scene in the Oval Office, I mean, an actual, you know, the president saying we are pausing all military aid. I mean, those are, yes, Friday.
It's ridiculous. I mean, we have now changed sides.
it looks like it very fast. And what you just mentioned is part of that. I mean, look, it's very concerning. And you know, this is the same story we've been talking about for years now, which is theoretically, I mean, you know, I talked to Susan Collins last week. She said, yeah, you know, I think the vast majority of people in this caucus are very pro-Ukraine and very supportive of, you know, the Reagan sort of, you know, look, I mean, most Republicans were supporting Ukraine in the last administration. Absolute silence pretty much since in the last few days. There are a couple of exceptions. I mean, Lisa Murkowski said she has been sick to her stomach watching this, which is pretty strong.
So it's just Murkowski and Collins who have been willing to vote against these nominees.
Well, McConnell has voted against three nominees.
And one of those is Kennedy.
Kennedy had, yeah, because I mean, Kennedy, I mean, there's kind of a personal link with McConnell because Kennedy is a big anti-vaxxer. You know, the polio vaccine, McConnell had polio as a child. He also voted against Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense, and Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence. So, yeah, he got three. I think Murkowski and Collins, you voted.
Speaking of Tulsi Gabbard,
yeah,
she questioned whether Ukraine and the U.S. really share common values and extended her critique to European countries that rallied around Zelensky, saying they didn't stand with us around the fundamental values of freedom. She's like a Russian asset, isn't she?
I mean, there's a lot of talk around that. I mean, I think the bigger question is Donald Trump a Russian asset? I mean, look, right. she is essentially parroting the administration view. I mean, I don't see any daylight between what you just said, quoting her.
Well, I think that's amplifying the view. I mean, instead of just parroting it.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, every member of the cabinet would probably parody that. I mean, what do you think, you know, Marco Rubio would say? I mean, he's interesting because he seems to have shifted his view even in the last few months. He was at that Oval Office thing. His body language was kind of striking. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, he was sort of shrinking into his chair.
Yeah.
Could he have said something like, like, stop that conversation from going there? I guess not.
Not if he wanted to keep his job. I mean, you know, he could have had a... We've said this probably many times about many different Republicans over the last several years. I mean, he could have had a career-ending but career-defining moment and walked out or resigned or something like that.
Liz Cheney moment?
I mean, yeah. I mean, she didn't have like that dramatic visual, but it certainly played out over time, and you knew where she was. You know, Rubio, it's been kind of this steady decline and kind of an avalanche over the last 10 years. I mean, you remember where he started in, say, 2016, 2015. I mean, I remember with him. I mean, I remember when I first wrote about him and like when he first ran, he was like a Tea Party guy. I remember he was probably the most eloquent sort of foreign policy Reagan immigrant story, like anti-communism, anti-Castro. I mean,
Cuban, of course.
Cuban, yeah, yeah. I've heard. I mean, he it was a very compelling argument. Now, you know, then that was kind of a hardcore Tea Party Republican view. But, you know, I was really impressed and he got elected. And, you know, it was basically his view for the first, you know, 6-7 years in the Senate. And then when he ran for president. And anyway, we know how this all played out.
But the Tea Party has kind of now adopted Trump, of course, right? I mean, yeah. If you're MAGA, if you were Tea Party.
Yeah, you would think there's probably a pretty high correlation. I mean, I remember, you know, you'd walk around these Tea Party rallies however many years ago, and they were so appalled at the deficit spending and all the deficits that Barack Obama was running up. They were, the deficit was everything to them, right? And, you know.
Now, yeah, Trump said, though, that he is going to balance the budget. He said that in the State of the Union.
Yeah, he said that in the 2016 campaign. It's going to be so easy.
Uh-huh.
I guess we'll see. I mean, it'll happen right after he ends the Ukraine-Russian war in 24 hours and build the wall and Obamacare, whatever.
Yeah. Have you been following any of the Weather Channel stuff?
I mean, only that they wanted to fund it. I mean, look, it's interesting. This is a classic thing that we take for granted, but you know, as citizens, you know, we basically indirectly avail ourselves to a lot of these forecasting services, many of them run or certainly subsidized by the government. And, you know, we have access to incredibly accurate weather forecasting now. Like I read somewhere, this might not be true, but I think it's true. It sounds right. We can predict what the weather will be in 1 week with a level of accuracy comparable, if not better than, say, 30 years ago, you could predict the weather tomorrow. Something like that, between computer stuff and forecasting things. So, yeah, I mean, when you pull the plug on that, presumably for a pretty relatively, you know, small cost, you know, you're affecting a lot of everyday lives. I mean, there's a reason there's a ton of people out there who just watch the Weather Channel all day, many of whom I'm related to.
Well, people have said, why do we need NOAA? Why do we need, we have the Weather Channel? And they don't realize, of course, that that is all made possible by NOAA. And
Yeah, it's all connected. It is all connected. And, you know, you really want to get literal about this. I mean, the weather is really the one thing you can watch on the news every night that, that actually affects your life, right? I mean, in most cases.
Is Lutnick said something. He's the Secretary of Commerce, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He seemed a little confused about all this, but he I think is talking about privatizing the Weather Service.
I mean, privatizing, I mean, you've heard this for years. I mean, that is the magic bullet to everything. Privatizing. Oh, okay. Well, what about this? It's going to go away. Oh, privatizing. You know, so, I mean, that's like what they say, right?
But it is an amazing resource, and it's huge, too, right?
Huge. Huge. But, you know, again, like in sort of a budget sense, I mean, relative to the budget, you know, in any number of areas, whether it's the Pentagon or whatever, I mean, it's minuscule.
So, and they're firing these people. And I saw an interview on MSNBC with, I guess, four of them. Mm-hmm. They all seem pretty brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's who we're getting rid of.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they'll all be employed now that once it gets privatized, you know, probably make more money. It's all going to work out.
Is Musk, how many people has he gotten rid of?
It's hard to get a count. I mean, I guess they've said they're saying millions, like billions in savings, trillions in savings, what have you. I mean, look, between numbers that I would not personally trust, anyone is free to trust them. And also the fact that a lot of these things aren't either being executed or being struck down in courts left and right. I mean, it's a very fluid situation. I mean, again, though, I mean, everything, if you think about if even in the pretty much most extreme scenario, if you were to take them all at their word that we are saving this amount of money, still a minuscule amount of money.
Yeah. And I don't think they're saving what they say they are.
I'm not. I mean, it is a lot of showmanship. I mean, it's a chainsaw, whatever he's doing. Yeah. I mean, he's a force multiplier of chaos and bombast and, you know, destruction, it would seem like.
Who showed up for the State of the Union? Who didn't? Who left themselves out?
A few people said they weren't. I mean, Chris Murphy didn't show up. AOC, I guess, didn't show up. McConnell didn't show up. I'm actually writing about him, and I was in his office a few hours before, and I said, are you going to go? And he wouldn't really tell me. He said he was undecided. And he stayed home, you know, although in fairness, I mean, he's had health problems. He's pretty much in a wheelchair these days, so it's kind of
really
hard to navigate. But, you know, you can't imagine. I mean, pretty awkward for him, too, because Trump hates him. I mean, the feeling is mutual. He's kind of isolated in his caucus, and there'd be all these standing ovations going on all around him for things that he fundamentally and genuinely does not believe in, you know, particularly abandoning Ukraine, things like
that. Is he that bad off that he would have to come in a wheelchair?
Yeah, he's been seen around the Senate in a wheelchair. I mean, I guess he's had a series of falls. I think he had one last month. I mean, I think he might have a broken leg or something like that. But when I was with him, he said he had to be in a wheelchair for another week. But yeah, I mean, it's easier to navigate around the Capitol in a wheelchair. He, you know, he also, you know, again, had polio as a kid.
What does he have, 2 years left?
Yeah, he's not running again. He's up in 2026. So he says, you know, step down as leader. He's not going to run again. He says he's going to devote the next year and a half, his last days in the Senate. He spent 42 years in the Senate, which he'll be 84 when he leaves. So that's exactly half his life in the Senate. He's going to devote it to foreign policy, Ukraine, Russia, NATO. Things that seem to be moving very fast against him and his own party.
And he obviously doesn't care about being singled out for speaking out.
I don't think so. I don't think so. No, but, you know, I
mean, there's no stakes for him. Does he want to be able to go home and in retirement, not be bothered by MAGA people who hate him for this?
Yeah. I mean, you would hope, you would think. I mean, that was kind of interesting, but I don't have any knowledge of this except in reading tea leaves. He did vote for Kash Patel.
Yeah, why is that?
You know, who's, you know, like Gabbard, like Kennedy, like, you know, even like Matt Gaetz and things like that. I mean, just kind of definitely a polarizing figure. I mean, you know, I did sort of wonder, like, does he actually not want to be harassed by the FBI? Because, you know, the Trump people just despise Mitch McConnell. And, you know, 84 years sort of going into retirement. I mean, if he makes it that far, I mean, but I don't know. I don't have any sense of that. But yeah, presumably he would like to be able to retire in to some degree of peace. and feel safe and have his family feel safe.
Now, the tariffs have been suspended on cars for Canada and Mexico.
Yeah, but I mean, the rest of them, I mean, a lot of the rest of the tariffs, you know, Canada, Mexico, China, I mean, still very much in effect. I mean, not sure how long, but I mean, you hear different things. He's going to back down. He's not going to back down. You know, the Canadians are going to save face, or Trump's going to save face by saying, well, look, the Canadians and Mexicans did this to stop the flow of fentanyl. But, you know, look, there's not a lot of economists out there who, especially even conservative economists, who are terribly excited about this. And look, the markets don't seem to be loving this either. So,
yeah, it's gone down, straight down the last couple of days.
Yeah, right? As of, I guess, Tuesday, when I was with McConnell, a few hours before Trump's speech, you know, he's in the middle of all this Ukraine stuff, market was tanking, tariffs were in place that morning. I guess there's been some correction, but ultimately it's about the same, it's less than it was, or around the same that it was when Trump won re-election.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Mark Leibovich. Trump has switched sides, basically, in this war.
That seems to be where this is heading.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it is. I mean, he's cut off all our aid, right, to Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, yeah, and look, his party supports him. There's no question about it. I mean, he has a hammer lock on the Republican Party. You know, the putative leaders of the party have followed suit almost, you know, without exception. But yeah, this is extraordinary. I mean, this undoes, you know, the entire sort of foreign policy order since World War II, or after, since, you know, after World War II.
80 years.
Yeah, and look, the thing is, I mean, you know this, I mean, presidents have more discretion on foreign policy than they do in pretty much any area, right? It's not like you can pass legislation, or I mean, I guess you can do resolutions and legislation stuff, but I mean, you know, that is the area where you can do a whole lot of damage, frankly, and this is kind of the whim of one man that is completely turning this ocean liner around, which is, you know, which incorporates the American military, American values, American alliances, the whole nine yards. So yeah, this is extraordinary.
And Zelensky has basically completely apologized. And
I mean, yeah, I mean, Zelensky's in obviously a very precarious position. I mean, his country has been attacked. I mean, the attack is continuing. It's sustained. It's deadly. I mean, people are dying all around him. You know, it's a terrible war. I mean, everyone would like it to end. But I mean, what is interesting is I think Zelensky, I think a lot of people take a great deal of solace about the unity of the other NATO countries, you know, and a lot of the other countries around the world. I mean, and again, the fundamental question is, whose side are we on?
And can Europe step up enough?
I mean, presumably they can. I mean, like if Ukraine can hold off Russia as successfully and as fiercely as they have, I mean, presumably if you add the NATO countries to that, I mean, you'd have like, you know, seems like a possibly pretty even shot. I mean, obviously nuclear capabilities and so forth, it gets very dicey very fast. But again, like what's the U.S. going to do?
Well, speaking of nuclear capabilities, can they send troops? They can't. NATO troops?
Can Europe?
Yeah. I mean, if they did, are we looking at World War III?
If they have their own alliance independent of the U.S., you know, the U.S. normally would, you know, obviously be the driving force here, presumably would have a veto. But, you know, if they decide they want to, sure, why not? I mean, I hope it doesn't come to that.
Me neither.
Yeah.
When is Trump going to say, okay, we'll have three-party negotiations?
I mean, it hasn't happened yet. Maybe right. A week from Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, week from Thursday. No, I don't, hasn't happened yet, which itself is kind of extraordinary.
This is National Security Advisor Mike Waltz compared Zelensky to an ex-girlfriend. Did you hear this?
Yeah. What did he say again?
He said he compared him to an ex-girlfriend that wants to argue everything that you said 9 years ago rather than moving the relationship forward.
I would say that that's an imperfect analogy.
It's more like an ex-girlfriend who killed your family.
Well, yes.
And tortured and kidnapped your children and gave them new identities.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. However, I would also say that, you know, you could theoretically have closure after that, sort of say, okay, I want to move on. But I mean, right. Ukraine hasn't moved on. They have been at war for 9 years straight, not 9 years literally.
Well, 2014 was the invasion of Crimea, right?
Yeah, I mean, 22 was Ukraine. But look, I mean, this is an ongoing and fierce and deadly and sort of dominant war in that country. And so, you know, when you have an ex-girlfriend from 9 years ago or ex-boyfriend, whatever, you're not together. I mean, you're obviously not over each other, but this is an ongoing, clear and present threat.
Ukraine has said that they will never recognize the occupied territories as Russian. I mean, going in, that's going to be a hard position for them to hold. I mean, they want these negotiations because they want this thing to stop.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think they want this thing to stop, but they also don't want to alienate the United States. I mean, this is like by far the most important alliance they have. I mean, NATO, but I mean, you know, U.S. is, you know, the major part of NATO. So, yeah, I mean, I do think that even if there's some kind of peace treaty signed or some kind of, you know, de-escalation of hostilities, and it's not like this thing ends. I mean, I guess it might, but I mean, we're looking at a massive sort of ongoing point of tension. I mean, it would be nice if there weren't a war there, obviously, but
Zelensky in that argument tried to point out that the Russians had violated agreements before, peace agreements.
Yeah, and they have.
And then that was when he was told he didn't thank them.
He wasn't wearing a tie, Al. You saw how he was dressed.
Yeah, evidently the one of the new people that was allowed in was a right-wing guy who actually his question was, why didn't you wear a suit?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that was queued up from inside the White House. There's video of like Trump greeting Zelensky coming in. The first thing out of Trump's mouth was, oh, you dressed up for the occasion. So
yeah, well, he asked Zelensky, this reporter asked Zelensky why he wasn't wearing a suit. And he says, well, he said something about in solidarity with my troops.
Troops, yeah.
And he said, but next time I might wear a suit, hopefully, and it might be nicer than yours.
Yeah, I mean, some were in the middle of it. I mean, Vice President Vance kind of picked up this mantle and said something like, do you own a suit? Something like that. And I think he was responding directly to Vance. But anyway, yeah, real high level topic.
Yeah, real high level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well then, what else is going on in D.C.? You're our D.C. guy.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there's a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty, obviously. I mean, you do hear people, both parties, frankly. I mean, this goes well beyond the kind of level of unsettlement that we certainly had the first go around. They seem much more prepared. The checks and balances seem very much quite defanged in so much as they're worse the first time. I mean, there are no quote unquote adults in the room here. I mean, you mentioned Mike Waltz, Marco Rubio. I mean, if anyone was giving solace to the, well, at least there'll be some adults in the room crowd, their appointments fairly early on was comforting to some. I mean, look, they've been seemingly, if they have their own views, they're certainly not, you know, they're not expressing them publicly or probably not to Trump. You know, the Republican Senate has been extremely feckless.
I don't know if anyone, I mean, I guess I expected it starting pretty soon when you start seeing the votes on the nominees. I mean, RFK got through and Gabbard got through.
Yeah. Hegseth got through. I mean, they all got through. I mean, except, I mean, Gates didn't get that far with him. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, Bondi, who, I mean, it's pretty extreme. I mean, she got through easily.
Patel.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, but if you look at, I mean, what checks and balances have been somewhat effective here? The courts, maybe. I mean, they've definitely halted a bunch of this stuff or slowed it down. And, you know, theoretically, the allies, I mean, the NATO allies, I mean, they've tried. I mean, they've been much more outspoken than, you know, the Republicans.
Well, there's one thing that's important with the NATO allies and us right now at this moment, and that's Ukraine.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are cleanly split. I mean, it does not, we are very much apart from the rest of NATO on this.
And this is an actual 180 by the United States. And he, of course, accused Zelensky of starting the war.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, if you sort of mention Washington, I mean, there is some of it is like, oh, the look and feel of Washington culture. I mean, people are used to hang out at the Trump Hotel and now they're hanging out at some bar or pub on Capitol Hill. And oh boy, you see people with red hats around. I mean, yeah. But I mean, you know, and then you have the next level. I mean, the Kennedy Center. I mean, Trump now runs the Kennedy Center and fired the whole board. And there's going to be a bunch of new board members of the Kennedy Center. I mean, what's the Kennedy Center honors going to look like next year? I mean, Kid Rock's going to win every award or something like that, or be honored.
A lot of people have canceled who were going to.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that, okay, so that's the level of culture. But then look, in the day to day, and this didn't happen last time, most people around town are either directly affected or know people who are being directly affected, either through job losses or certainly job uncertainty. You know, a lot of people you talk to, I mean, their emails are shut off like this. You know, they don't know what it's about. They don't have anyone to call. Communication breaks down. I mean, so the chaos certainly feels a lot more, is hitting home a lot more here. And obviously that's going to trickle down throughout the country. What, you know, partly because the federal government also exists. Well,
what percentage of federal workers are not in DC? It's quite,
you know, I don't have an answer for that, but there's quite a bit. How's that? Right. I mean, you know, obviously this is the most concentrated federal workplace or area with federal workers, but yeah, I mean, there are federal workers in every state, right? So, and some of them have a lot, especially, you know, Virginia, Maryland, you know, in areas around capital.
Well, I think all around the country.
Yeah, are, totally. Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Lots of federal workers.
Yeah. And, but it's, again, it's not just federal workers. It's who they work for, right? I mean, it's, there's been a lot of focus, obviously, on USAID because the administration is focused on it. I mean,
there was recently a judge who reversed some of that, right?
Yeah, some of that, although it's unclear, though, you know, we were talking about this. I mean, whether that's just foreign aid or whether that's USAID literally and so forth. But anyway, we'll put that under the larger umbrella of uncertainty, right?
But what USAID does is send food and medicine. I mean, that's mainly what they do.
It is mainly what they do.
Yep. The underdeveloped world where people are literally starving.
Yes.
And literally getting diseases that are perfectly preventable.
Right.
And, by inoculation.
Yeah. And of course, you know, yes. So, I mean, yes, the human toll of the people who are losing their jobs from USAID is significant. But I mean, that absolutely mushrooms out into real despair and, you know, sometimes lethal in the countries that USAID helps. So, yeah.
There's that. And this is the richest guy in the world. I mean, the irony here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, no one knows what to make of him. I mean, you would ask Republican senators, congressmen. I mean, they don't know what to make of him. They just know that, like, they got to obey him. I mean, presumably they have private doubts about him. Presumably they roll their eyes about him, like the way they used to Trump. But, you know, look, they are not going to use whatever voice they have.
Carville said to be quiet and let him implode, right?
Well, they seem to be listening.
Well, I'd say the Democrats in Congress seem to be mainly listening.
Yeah.
People are showing up at stuff, right? And the Republicans have canceled their town halls.
Yeah, that's true. And it's kind of pathetic and probably strategically maybe smart. But I mean, yeah, I mean, there have been a few ugly visuals or videos of angry people. And yeah, I mean, people, I assume this will build. I mean, we do need to remember, I mean, it's still March. I mean, we're not even 2 months in yet. I mean, it does, in any administration, it takes a while to sort of arrive at what both the center of sort of day-to-day life is going to be, both in Washington, but also what the kind of public response is going to be. And look, I mean, some of the key bottom lines here is that, you know, inflation hasn't really gone down. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty around the economy. And so, look, there's not a lot of patience out there, it would seem. And it would also seem that the Democrats, if they do get their acts together, you know, will have some pretty solid messages, which is like, hey, look, he's taken a perfectly good economy under the last administration completely trashed it. I mean, something like that. I mean, there are some pretty concise economic arguments you can make, beginning with inflation. I mean, people focus on eggs, but that's across the board.
Well, eggs. I mean, there's an avian flu.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to understand the price of eggs has gone up because they've had to kill how many chickens. I mean, Minnesota has a lot of poultry. And last time there was an avian flu, it was a huge, huge deal.
Right.
And so, of course, the price of eggs is going to go up. I think that's the last thing people should focus on.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the prices of pretty much everything continue to be high. I think Donald Trump is probably benefiting a bit at first from the, you know, long and sustained silence that Joe Biden had as a Democratic messaging president, right? I mean, you've gone from one extreme to another, and quite often presidential elections are an extreme reaction to what you had in the last one. And Biden's a very diminished presence, certainly at the end of his presidency. And even at the beginning, I mean, he was not the gifted messenger that he apparently was early.
He kind of learned it from the campaign, because in the campaign we were in the middle of COVID, and he didn't have to do anything. He just stayed in his home. Well, and
he sort of stayed quiet. I mean, that was kind of the Carville argument circa 2019, 2020, which is like, okay, he's screwing up everything. Let's just let that be our central message. And, you know, lo and behold, it worked. But that was a very different time. But like, look, I mean, Democrats need to find what they want to say, but more importantly, they need to find their leaders. You know, you remember there is despair after every election. I mean, remember the 2004 election? I mean, I remember you remember it because you were, I guess you were on Air America then, and I was sitting in
that 2004. Theater. Yes, yeah.
I was sitting in that theater in New Hampshire while you tackle the heckler of Howard Dean or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't tackle him. I lifted him up.
Lifted his legs, denying him purchase.
That's right, exactly.
Yes. Whenever we have this discussion, you use the word purchase, and it was used in your quotes about that incident at the time. Everyone should read it. It was in a New York Times Magazine article by Russell Shorto. I used to work.
Oh, yeah.
With. And yes, in the quote in that, the profile of Al Franken. And,
but the New York Post lied about it and said that I tackled the guy and drove him to the ground or something like that. And
anyway, you were around in 2004. Kerry lost. I mean, there was abject despair. Like, what are Democrats going to do? I mean, Republicans control everything, right?
But George W. Bush was not.
Well,
not this guy.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump doesn't exactly wear terribly well in office. I mean, if the very limited precedent we have is true. But I guess my point is, by 2008, the future, the message, the messenger was apparent, and that was Barack Obama. And then Democrats didn't really have to choose any new leaders for 8 years, and they didn't really bother to try again in 2016 because they figured it was Hillary's turn. And then Hillary lost, and then they didn't really bother to try again after that.
Some tried.
Some tried.
It was a big field.
It was a big field, you know. But you know, and look, Biden won fair and square, but it was not. I mean, there was no new leader was chosen. Let's just say that. I mean, since Barack Obama ascended now, 15 years ago, Democrats have not been called upon to find new leader. And look, they just be nice if that process started earlier. Maybe it will in the midterms.
We have elections, of course, in when are the odd? It's New Jersey and Virginia.
Yeah, the big off year elections are Governor of New Jersey, Governor of Virginia, Mayor of New York.
And state legislature.
Legislature, too. I mean, the big ones, I think, is the Governor of Virginia, just because Virginia has so many federal employees in it. Youngkin, the current governor, who's not running again. But
He can't. It's a one-term.
It's a one-and-done thing in Virginia. But Youngkin is, I mean, he's become such a culture warrior. I mean, he's you know, he was a big what was the big thing that was going to ruin America a couple of years ago?
It was critical race theory.
He was like at the forefront of that.
They actually, certain town halls had book burnings.
Yeah, exactly. I was a big book burning guy. Anyway, I mean, you know, Virginia has a lot of Trumpy and sort of culture war elements to it, you know, in addition to the federal workers. So I think that might be the biggie this year. But I guess the point is, I mean, this does play out over a while, and we have not reached anything resembling what looks like a permanent level of what this early administration will look like. It's still very sort of early shock and awe-ish, I would say.
So do you have any friends who have been laid off?
Well, in journalism, I do, but that's a whole different conversation. Neighbors. Yeah, people I know, people I hear about.
And so it must be a difficult time there.
It is. I mean, again, I mean, I feel extremely lucky. I mean, but it's a terrible time. Yeah, because we're surrounded by it. And, you know, just like any community that is hit by, you know, big job disruptions and big cultural disruptions and so forth. And, you know, there are variations that happen in state capitals and so forth. I mean, there's a lot of disruption. I mean, I think the added disruption here is just the total uncertainty and seemingly incoherent sort of chaotic way that this seems to be being done. And also, frankly, the sense that a lot of people think that malignancy is behind all of that. Malignancy to, you know, a very democratic city.
Have they talked about the federal government taking it over and not having a mayor and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean,
there's some noise about that.
Yeah, there is. Although the White House seems to be pulling back from that a little bit.
Good.
Yeah, there was that. I mean, I sort of would put that as kind of a back burner item at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
Yeah, man, oh, man. I mean, you know, look, it's all, there's got to be a platitude to end this with. But no, I mean, it's just, look, it's just very uncharted. It doesn't seem to be going terribly well.
Well, thanks.
Hey, you're welcome, Al. Always good being with you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week.